Howdy do, everybody. It's time for another OneLiner.com podcast. I'm Craig Eastman, and as always with me is Scott Morris.
Well, hello there.
And the man known to many as Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
We have four films to talk about this time, although you may only want to pay attention to the first three, more of which later on. But without further ado, let's get going. Good old Tom Cruise just doesn't know when to quit. Pushing 50, he seems intent on denying his encroaching years by teaming up with Cameron Diaz in Night and Day, an action comedy spy caper from director James Mangold. Scott, what is Night and Day all about?
Well, hate him or hate him, it's impossible not to hate Tom Cruise and his Sunday mentalisms. But he does infuriatingly keep on putting in pretty decent performances and pretty decent films, and surprisingly this turns out to be another one of them. The film itself is essentially fluff from start to finish. Cameron Diaz plays June Havens, an everyday mechanic who soon finds herself entangled with Roy Miller's top spy shenanigans, played by Tom Cruise. Miller is, depending on how you look at it, it's either a rogue agent rebelling against the corrupt government, trying to protect a young scientist, played by Paul Dano, or he's a unhinged mentalist who's determined to sell secrets to the highest bidder, depending on whether you believe the government or the charismatic Miller. Inevitably, you get a kind of love interest theme going at the same time as some fairly ridiculous action set pieces. Well, I want to say that it's not doing anything that you've not seen before. It did feel kind of familiar when I was watching it, but I can't actually think of another film that mixes quite this combination of tropes and themes and genre staples in quite these proportions, so maybe I'm doing it a little bit of a disservice. There's a likeable chemistry between Diaz and Cruise. Paul Dano puts in a pretty decent turn. Peter Sarsgaard alternates between slimy and duplicitous commendably well, and throughout the whole piece, the acting is probably better than the material actually deserves. But unlike most of the films we'll talk about tonight, Night and Day actually hits its tone perfectly. It's plainly not aiming for realism, and it's light and breezy enough to be enjoyable because of its ridiculousness rather than in spite of it. The tongues are pretty firmly set in cheek with this film, which lets it get away with an awful lot of cheesy script writing and action set pieces, and if you were going to drop a list of the best films of the year, this certainly isn't going to be on it. But if you were making a list of the most enjoyable films of the summer, then this would probably earn a place. Whether that says more about the state of cinema this summer than about the quality of this film is a question we'll leave for another day. But for the most part, I found Night and Day to be at absolute worst inoffensive, and for most of the time pretty enjoyable. So I would say, for pardon the spoiler, but it's probably the most enjoyable film that I've seen that we'll talk about in this podcast. I have no real complaints with it. It's funny enough when it needs to be funny, and it's the action's very well handled. It's decently handled all the way throughout. It's well directed. It's pacey enough. It's no point boring, so I quite enjoyed it. Yeah, I'd give it a guarded review. It's certainly better than most of the things that are out at the moment.
Well, neither Drew nor I have seen it, so I feel confident when I speak for us both and say we agree.
Yes, wholeheartedly.
Huzzah!
Yay! Good old Angelina Jolie just doesn't know when to quit. Hollywood just doesn't have that many credible action heroines at the moment, so it's time for her to pop some more caps and asses as government agent Evelyn Salt in Salt. And cracked black pepper. She plays a spook somewhat put out by claims from a Russian defector that she is in fact a commie sleeper agent with a mission to assassinate the president. Director Philip Noyce has a track record encompassing both thrills, see Patriot Games and its sequel Clear and Present Danger, and chills in the form of Dead Calm. Unfortunately, he's also responsible for Sliver and The Bone Collector, the latter being his first teaming with Jolie. Drew, give us a wee rundown on Salt.
It's pish. Can we move on now?
Why not?
It's just a very, very stupid film. I mean, there's really not one part of it that isn't stupid. And it's almost impossible from the beginning to care about anything that's happening. I know Scott had said to me that he lost interest in it at the point when Angelina Jolie starts... She's escaping from custody at one point and overpowers the police officer driving the car and gets him to accelerate by using a taser on him. which is kind of impressive, actually, because I'd lost interest at least 30 minutes before that, so how he was able to have any hope beyond that, I have no idea. Well, the character's not very interesting. I suppose it's nice enough looking, it's fairly slightly produced, but just none of the consequences are the decisions any of the characters make any sense at all, so in which case you just spend time looking at your feet, the wall, anything, rather than what's going on screen, because you know how it's going to end and nothing makes any sense. I don't have anything more to say. I know I'm not prepared for this, but I don't want it to be as a terrible, terrible film that you're best avoiding because it's dumb.
Scott, did you pay any attention after the marionette taser, or do you feel you can add anything to that?
Well, at that point, I did take a deep interest in my knees and staring at those. It's just everything this film's handled with such a po-faced gravitas that it almost becomes a work of satire. Everything in it is so laughable that even things that I'm sure must have been intended as jokes were handled so earnestly that it builds this sort of contrast between how idiotic the plot and the action is and how seriously everyone's taken it, and it just sort of rips the film in half. I mean, the plot's a sort of Matroska doll of inanity. Each stupid concept has another even stupider concept inside it. It's all fractal in nature. It's like a Mandelbrot set of dim-witted, nonsensical storylines. None of it makes even the slightest bit of sense, not in the way that strikes you when you're sort of thinking about it idly on the way back home. The plot is composed entirely of holes, held together by inaction sequences that don't border on ridiculous. They've set up home, got married, and become a naturalised citizen of ridiculous. I actually like most of the actors involved in this, and for that matter, I like most of the director's work and the writer's work as well. It's written by Kurt Wimmer, who's done a few films that I'm very fond of, but all involved need a stern talking to, probably for different reasons, but it all relates to the fact that assault's just being handled in every respect as if it's a serious work of dramatic fiction rather than a loose coalition of the dumbest ideas ever convicted to celluloid. If you can separate out how ridiculous everything is, it's competently handled on every mechanical level that you'd choose to judge it against. It's well enough acted and framed and shot and all that. Not a badly made film, but it's just not a film that you could make in a good way. Wimmer's previous outings, like Equilibrium, had at least a touch of self-awareness and levity to them. Give the characters enough of a grounding that you can start to invest in what goes on to be some pretty silly stuff, but this seems to attempt to up the stakes and engagement by being very serious all the way throughout. I suppose the theory was that if the on-screen characters believed their own inordinately bonkers schemes and their motivations, the less likely it would be for an audience to call bullshit on them, but it's had the exact opposite effect. Salt's not actually a dull film, but by the time it had finished, I just was remarkably bored with it. It just bounces hard off my limits of complete nonsense. No, really, don't watch it. Not even ironically.
Yeah, it's dreadful. It's not one of those things stupid enough to be entertaining or funny. It's just bad.
It's just stupid enough to be really stupid.
Yeah. It's not even one of those things that it's like everything stupid but it's done tongue in cheek or in any way like that. It's very, very poor face, as Scott says. And I know the idea that you'll swallow a lie but choke on a fib, that sort of thing comes up quite a bit. And you've got like a central concept that she's this Russian sleeper agent. Now, you might buy that, right? But everything around that, if you swallow that big lie, that's a big thing you suspend your disbelief on, is that this character's a Russian undercover agent, whatever. Everything around it's got to make sense, but nothing else at all makes any sense whatsoever. It's just, I mean, every single level of it is more ridiculous than the next. I think we've spent enough time, though. Do not watch it. Next.
I mean, the strange thing is, if this had had the same tone as Night and Day had, it probably would have been quite a lot of fun, because you could make this into a comedy very easily just by having one character smile occasionally. But no, as it stands, it's just utter tripe.
Salt should be taken with a pinch of nothing. Oh dear. So then, The Expendables. Good old Sly Stallone just doesn't know when to quit. The last Rambo outing seems to have given the man a somewhat vicarious second wind, and The Expendables promises balls-out action of the kind we haven't seen since the 80s, with a cast that, on paper, seem more than capable of backing that claim up. Sly's an old man now, Scott. Is he pushing the boat out a bit too far with this romp?
Yes, although not in a way that's actually directly related to his performance or in it, which is perhaps a little odd. The Expendables seeks to recapture the past fairly obviously. It's loaded with action stars of the past, even if most of them are little more than cameos. You might also look at it as a kind of belated handing over of the baton. Jason Statham and Jet Li starring in this film also represent damn near all of the non-comic book related action output of the film world over the last decade. But The Expendables proves to be more of symbolic than actual importance and of more theoretical than actual interest. With such a broad-ranging cast, it seemed inevitable that it would wind up being anything other than barely distinguishable action figures, but what's more remarkable is that no attempt's been made anyway to fix this. Essentially, in The Expendables, you have a team of mercenaries. They are hired by Bruce Willis to go into a small Central American or South American island that might as well be called Valverde to kick out a CIA agent that's there. Basically, it's lifting the plot more or less from Commando, but without the kid in it. I suppose there was more plot to the film than this, but I can't actually remember any of it, and I was really not given any particular reason to care why this team winds up rampaging around this island. There's really too many people in the film. The script winds up being hamstrung by it, because it needs to give Dolph Lundgren his contractually obligated 5 minutes in the sun, and Jet Li his 5 minutes in the sun, and then Mickey Rourke his 5 minutes in the sun, and I've no problem with any of these actors, if you can discount Randy, not an actor, Couture.
And Terry, not an actor, Cruz.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of the film that just seems to revolve around shouting that, hey, we've got Stone Cold Steve Austin, or whoever, rather than actually doing anything with them, which is a less than optimal arrangement of film. So I'm not really given any reason to care about either the plot or any of the characters in it. It does seem to be basing quite a lot of the runtime about strands of Jason Statham's love life and Stallone's dawning realisation of his need for salvation, but both of those strands are just about as boring as they sound. But on a technical level, it's reasonably well handled. I've no real issue with most of it. It is, on occasion, violently stupid enough to be slightly interesting, but not anywhere like often enough to hold an interest throughout an entire film. Strangely, despite being the exact opposite of the point, or at least the promotional push of the film, if this had been just Jason Statham and Sylvester Stallone teaming up against Johnny McEvil or whatever the guy's name was, without all of these co-star distractions, it would have made a far better film, though yeah. Maybe a bit less marketable.
You're right, there's a quick bit of camaraderie between them. Their scenes, particularly the most entertaining ones.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that actually worked very well. I mean, Statham is a fairly capable action performer, and Stallone, much as you say he's old, the man's in far better shape than any of us are.
fair play.
I mean, the guy really does look like he could do another 10 years of action films like this. I mean, it can't all be Photoshopped. The guy's quite ripped, and he's very convincing in it for the most part. It's just everyone else around him. I mean, what's Randy Couture doing in this film?
Who's Randy Couture?
He's like a UFC fella.
He's a mixed martial arts dude, which isn't Terry Crews as well, I think.
Who's Terry Crews?
I'm assuming he's the same.
I think he's the token black guy, if memory serves.
Yeah. No, I'm sure he's from a martial arts system as well, but it's one of these things, though, with the world of martial arts. If you get to a certain level in martial arts, you will have your own film at some point, and that seems to be the excuse for calling these guys action stars.
Well, I mean, it seems that the only point to have Couture in it was so he could fight with Stone Cold Steve Austin. So they go, oh, we're fighting between wrestling and UFC or whatever. And it's just...
I know, Terry Crews was an NFL player.
I mean, it's that concept's sort of silly enough as it is, but having them also spend a decent amount of time talking and acting quite badly throughout it is just... It's just not acceptable in a film where you've actually got decent people in it. It's just too messy and unfocused. I just really couldn't bring myself to care about anyone. None of it held my attention for any length of time, apart from when it was being gratuitously violent, and it didn't do that often enough or well enough to really care about it.
I mean, it managed to ridiculously violent thing more often than, for instance, Ninja Assassin did, which failed after having a ridiculously violent opening and never coming close to it again, really. The plot is forgettable, to say the least, and the dialogue is appalling. What makes at least some of it watchable and entertaining, I would say, is there are a few decent action sequences that are kind of over the top. Jason Statham throwing his knives left, right and centre, and you can't really dislike a film that starts off with Dolph Lundgren firing a grenade at somebody and having their entire top half explode and leaving just a pair of bloody legs. And just an insane staircase with an insanely powerful shotgun exploding people left, right and centre.
I would like to point out we are making it sound a lot better than it actually is with that. I mean, that's about 40 seconds of 90 minutes, you know. That's
yes,
actually interesting.
Alas, I mean, there are a few things like they're over the top and they're entertaining, but as you say, Scott, yeah, they're certainly aren't enough of them, they aren't frequent enough or long enough. But the other thing that makes it is the scenes between Stallone and Statham, particularly. There's a good camaraderie between them, quite a good chemistry on screen, it's entertaining. And to a lesser extent, most of the scenes with Stallone in them, entertaining's wrong, but they're passable enough because even though the dialogue is abysmal, Stallone's presence is quite pleasing. He's got a good charisma, and there's just something kind of easygoing about his relationship with pretty much everybody else he's on screen with. It works, but the whole film's a bit of a mess. The plot is forgettable, and yeah, I can't really recommend. There's some entertaining bits in it, but you're better off spending your time on something else.
The character names pretty much say all you need to know about the film. You know, like Barney Ross, Lee Christmas, Gunnar Jensen, Paul Rhodes, Payne, Hail Caesar, the Brit, Tool, and can you guess which character Ying Yang is?
Oh, also, my goodness. Like,
the names are the most basic of ciphers as well. Because Steve Austin, who basically is a terrible actor and is largely just there as a massive hulking brute to punch people, is called Payne. Up all night thinking of that name, I suspect.
Oh my god.
Not recommended anyway, though.
No.
We're at something of a junction here. We have another film to discuss. That film is The Human Centipede. At Scott's behest, what we're going to do is warn you now that if you're of a gentle nature, if you're of a fragile disposition, you should leave now. And Scott will edit in the outro music. And then, for those of you who want to stay after class to discuss this thing, stay to the end of the outro, and you'll find us there chatting about it. So if you're going to make a cup of tea and live a normal life from this point, we bid you adieu. We'll speak to you next time. The rest of you hang about. So to everyone who's leaving, cheerio from me, cheerio from Drew,
goodbye,
cheerio from Scott,
see ya,
and we'll just pretend the next 5 minutes never happens.
Bye.
The Human Centipede. Those crazy German doctors just don't know when to quit. The poster for The Human Centipede claims it is, and I quote, 100% medically accurate, unquote. Viewers might find that claim hard to stomach, although probably not so much as a central conceit, which sees a renegade German doctor attempting to fuse three hapless victims together to form the eponymous entity. To discuss the plot of The Human Centipede further would require vocal and anatomical juxtapositions that I'm not necessarily comfortable with using in a day-to-day way. So, Scott, catch the ball.
But you got to give writer-director Tom Six credit on some level, at least. It's just about the only...
credit!
This is just about the only properly horrifying concept for a horror film I've seen in... maybe ever. It's certainly more original than some teenage girls getting lost in the woods and falling prey to some oddball murderer. Although that's exactly how this human centipede starts, but it gets more disturbing after that. So the problem is that the concept itself is such an integral part of the film that I almost don't want to give it away, not just due to the usual spoiler reasons, but because it's literally the only thing that the film is. But that said, the film's own trailer has no such dilemmas, so I guess you can probably discuss it here. Whether you'd want to is another concept entirely. Should we give it away?
Why not?
Should we describe the horrors that are perpetrated upon this?
Yeah, I think anyone who's likely to want to have seen this film's probably seen it already by this point anyway, and anyone who finds the notion of it disgusting was never going to watch it anyway, so I don't think we'll be ruining it for anyone.
Fair enough. So you have a resident nutty professor, Dr. Heiter.
He's got the craziest face ever.
Yes. It's hard to know which came first, the crazy man or the crazy face. He's had a plan in mind for some time. So what he's done is procure himself two ditzy American girls and one ranting Japanese fella, and he's going to stitch them together in such a way that mouthful area of one person is attached to the buttocular area of another, thus creating a long chain of stitched together humans where the effluent from one would pass down the stream.
a single digestive tract.
That is a stomach-churning concept. And when you hear it explained by him quite calmly with a series of crudely drawn illustrations and a slideshow, when his victims are tied to tables whimpering and screaming, that's quite a powerful scene. And if that had been the end of it, it probably would have been like a properly knockout punch. Mm. But that scene's like half an hour into the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with it is that the idea is more powerful than the execution. The Doctor delivers on his promise, builds this thing, and then you see it basically shuffle about pitifully. And even if you just seen that bit, if that would have been like the final reveal, this film would have been an absolute stunning knockout. Not pleasant, obviously, but I mean, God, it would have been impactful if nothing else. And that's probably what you want from a horror, surely. But the problem is that this all happens when there's still like 40, 50 minutes left to do. And seeing this horrendous chain of humanity pathetically shuffle around for a while is sort of initially quite repellent and then just gets lessened quite quickly as time goes on, and it doesn't do anything else at all for the rest of the time, and it all gets kind of boring and almost laughable by the end of it. There's just really nothing left in the tank after that, and you've kind of stopped paying attention to it long before the credits roll. It shoots its load far too early into the pacing of the thing for it to have any real concern after about, I think it's about halfway through when all this kicks off. If it had been restructured a lot, I think this might actually have been, whether it had been a good film, it could have been a tremendously effective film if you'd had this sort of rebadged so that it was like a, I don't know, like cops on the trail of some kind of serial killer, and this sort of who's like leading hints of being a master plan or something, and this being the kind of master plan at the end of it.
Or if it were a short film. Right.
Oh yeah, or a short film or a half-hour film, something like that. Yeah, it would have been great. But as it stands at the minute, it's just a kind of ridiculous pop culture touchstone that doesn't need to be seen to be understood and will be quite quickly forgotten.
Well, it's certainly not a horror film, is it, essentially? I think to call it a horror film...
Well, the central concept's pretty horrific.
It's horrific, but it's not horrible. It's not a horror film in the sort of quintessential sense. It's disgusting.
I'll grant you that.
But it's simply, like you say, it's all about the central conceit, which is designed purely to be a single, the single most disgusting idea that Tom Six could come up with. And that, to me, doesn't necessarily make a horror film. And certainly at the point within... Within a couple of minutes of the phrase, "I'm sorry, I have to shit," the film, it's most definitely no longer a horror film, and it becomes a sort of run-of-the-mill, oh, now there's two detectives at the door. Oh, right, okay. Yeah. There's a bit of a Deus Ex-type scenario going on there of like, right, okay, now we've gotten there, where can this possibly go? It needs to be tidied up, it needs to be resolved. Oh, let's have a couple of police officers knock on the door and think that something's wrong. I don't know what to say. I don't think I can add anything to what you've said, to be honest, Drew.
What you said. It's an appalling film. You shouldn't waste your time with it, probably. It's marketed as a horror film, so I'll make the quite reasonable assumption that it's terrible.
What have you... That oh, you haven't fair. Actually watched it?
No.
Oh, right. Fair enough.
You now know, essentially, everything you need to know about the film. And indeed, you would know everything you need to know about the film just by watching the trailer. So if you're really interested, just watch that and you'll save yourself about 80 minutes of bother.
I think Roger Ebert sums it up better than we can. I'm just looking here. It's from Studio Briefing. And he's Roger Ebert says, "I'm required to award stars to movies I review. This time I refuse to do it. The star rating system is unsuited to this film." There you go. That's pretty succinct, isn't it?
I mean, it's just an execution of a concept that should not have been executed. Whether it does it well or not is almost irrelevant. It just shouldn't have been made.
It's an execution of a concept that shouldn't have been conceived.
Exactly. Yeah.
So basically although, saying that the execution should really involve the person who had the concept.
Yes.
Although, bizarrely, Ebert goes on to say, and I quote, well, he says that within Dutch director Tom Six, quote, "there stirs the soul of a dark artist."
They're stirring something.
Yeah, he's stirring something, all right. I just hope that the impending sequel, Human Centipede, full sequence, which apparently features 12 segments,
awesome.
offers some sort of broadly cinematic experience, which this certainly did not.
Or perhaps a dance routine.
Brilliant. The tagline on the poster for full sequence is 100% medically inaccurate. I'm hoping that's some sort of indication that he is. The next one's going to be at least slightly tongue in cheek.
Literally, in this case,
if you pardon the unintended pun. Yeah, I certainly can't add anything to what you said, Scott. It's a terrible, terrible little film. It's a horrible concept. It's one of those things that is trying to push an envelope that. Really, where there's no need for an envelope to exist. It's something that's conceived on a subhuman level. There are films that I can understand people enjoy that are exploitative or sort of horrifically gory that I can understand people sort of taking in some sort of base enjoyment in the vicarious kind of dirt and muck of it all, but this just isn't one of them. Don't watch it. And with that, we bid you adieu, some of you for a second time. Farewell from me, farewell from Drew.
Goodbye.
And farewell from Scott.
See ya.